The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We have an acting judge, appointed judge by Democrats, by the club, and they're keeping now, I guess this is our fifth week, not campaigning, but you saw what happened, what just took place in that court, and hopefully the motion to dismiss this trial will go through, because this trial is a disaster for our country. It's a disaster for New York State, New York City. Greg Jarrett just says, where exactly is the crime? You know what the crime is? I beat Hillary Clinton. That's what the crime is. And they don't want me to beat on behalf of, I think, 200 million people. They don't want me to beat Biden. Okay, but it's a shame. This is what they've done.
The crime, as he says there, is that he beat Hillary Clinton. That was in 2016. We could add to that that he beat Joe Biden in 2020. And they know that he'll beat him again. They know. He'll beat him again in 2024. And so this is why the lawfare intensifies. This is why he's spending 4 or 5 weeks in this Manhattan court. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on another beautiful day here in central Oklahoma. You can get to the live video stream of this show at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. Lots and lots to get to on today's show, including a pile of emails we've been collecting for the past week or so. Hopefully we'll have some time at the end of the program to get into that. So think about this case for a second. And I touched on this yesterday, but here, as you'll see in a montage here in a moment, here they're trying to get Trump for this misdemeanor and then maybe the lowest class felony, you know, blending this clerical error together with a campaign finance violation. And in the midst of these proceedings, Michael Cohen, the star witness, he's admitting to felonies that are far worse than anything they're trying to get Trump on. Yeah, I helped myself. $60,000. I stole it. I was upset. Yeah, they reduced my bonus from $150,000 down to $50,000. So I just went in there and took a cut. Took it myself. He's guilty of lying. He's perjured himself over and over again, and he openly admits it. And now he's openly admitting that he's stealing from the Trump organization. This is the guy that's going to bring down Trump? It says here, this is from ABC. Cohen told jurors that he stole from the Trump organization after his 2016 holiday bonus was slashed to $50,000 from the $150,000 he usually received. Cohen claimed to have paid $50,000 to a technology firm for its work artificially boosting Trump's standing in a CNBC online poll about famous businessmen. Cohen said he gave the firm only $20,000 in cash in a brown paper bag. Who does this? Like the mafia. He's giving $20,000 in cash to this firm, keeping $30,000 for himself. Says here, but he sought reimbursement from Trump for the full amount, pocketing the difference. I mean, this has backfired so stupendously. I mean, you've got CNN. You've not all of them, but you've got the regime media pivoting now because it's such a spectacular fail. Listen to this from CNN and Company, clip one.
He admitted to stealing cash from the Trump organization. Now, throughout this trial, consider this. The prosecution has painted Michael Cohen as sort of this bumbling, pathetic character whose only sins were his misguided, undying loyalty to Donald Trump. Did you lie to Congress? Yes, I did. But I did it because I was in the sway of the Svengali hold of Donald Trump. But now you see something a little different. Now there's an argument to be made that actually you're just an opportunistic thief. As an attorney, the idea, first of all, of paying in bags of cash, it's only asking for trouble. But dealing in these sandwich bags of cash, these brown paper bags of cash to pay people is already problematic. But the idea that he would just grab a wad of cash and stick it in his pocket, I think has moved Michael Cohen from this figure where he's part Tom Hagen from The Godfather, but really more like Fredo Corleone, to now this guy who's just a thief.
They knew about this. They minimized it. The prosecutor misled this jury.
Say, I'm still kind of reeling from the revelation that Michael Cohen stole money from the Trump Organization, and that wasn't, at least to my knowledge, that the prosecution didn't get that out earlier.
Because they appear to have caught Cohen in another lie, so far there is no direct link proven beyond a reasonable doubt to the defendant in this alleged conspiracy. There,
you stole, and here's why this matters an enormous amount. This isn't just Michael Cohen stealing from the Trump Org. This is Michael Cohen stealing in the course of the $420,000 payment that is the heart of the crime. And the prosecution's case is, and they've said variations of this over and over, Donald Trump knew exactly what that $420,000 was for. He knew that it was for Stormy Daniels. He knew every penny. He knew every paperclip. No, he didn't, because he was getting robbed on that $420,000. Here's the other thing that is indefensible for the prosecution. Their theory now is Donald Trump committed either a misdemeanor or a Class E felony, the lowest felony. It goes from A to E. And while he was committing either that misdemeanor or Class E felony, he was the victim of a Class C felony, larceny, committed by our star witness, the prosecution's star witness, who we gave a free pass to. Whatever the outcome of this case is, it still may well result in conviction. That's an outrage. That is not just.
Only God could maneuver events in such a way where it would be this poetic. CNN, it's backfired in such a spectacular fashion that CNN now is forced to defend Donald Trump. To defend Donald Trump. I mean, you couldn't have imagined that happening 2 seconds ago. But now, look at, I mean, at least with that one, they're not all on board. Sam sent me this headline from MSNBC, how Michael Cohen's past lies make him a more credible witness. His lies, that they're actually virtues now. As soon as you hate Trump, if you hate on Trump, all of your sins are forgiven in the minds of some of these crazies, really. Look at the derangement that's on display every day. And yet, some are having to pivot now. They are having to pivot because I think they're getting the sense that, look, it's not that we're talking about a conviction now. We're heading for an acquittal. We'll see what happens with the jury. No one can tell for sure. But I think they're starting to backpedal a little bit, knowing just how crazy this whole loss. This was the one they didn't want of the four, because they knew there was nothing. It had no legs to stand on. And yet you're going back to 2016. I think it was Steve Bannon earlier today that talked about how that this case has been in the works for 7 or 8 years. And as I've explained, I mean, there's lots of radical leftist attorneys that have taken a pass on it because they know it doesn't have any substance. As I say, poetic justice. This is just yet another development showing that they're guilty of what they're claiming Donald Trump did. And as the last guy said there on CNN, it's a worse crime. I mean, you're trying to get Donald Trump on a clerical error, how he marked it, you know, whether it was for attorney's fees or hush money, whatever. And then Trump, he keeps coming out every day saying these NDAs, they're not only legal, they're common. They're happening all the time. And meanwhile, Michael Cohen gets to just help himself with to tens of thousands of dollars. He's the man that should be in prison. Listen to Fox News, clip 6.
I mean, at this point, I think you have to just say, no, the witness is no longer relevant with us or supportive of what the prosecution is trying to do. Once he has indicated both the conflicts in terms of him hating Trump, but then add on top of that layers of inappropriate money that he was earning out of his relationship, a sort of pay-to-play scheme that he was setting up on his own. And yeah. Then on top of that, he's stealing from his client. I mean, this is a train wreck. There's no life support. There's no pulse at this point. You just have to, as a prosecutor, say, you know what? We just probably wasted our entire investigation by putting this man on the stand. And it does highlight how this was a political witch hunt as opposed to a genuine, sincere effort to bring facts and the law together to present to a jury to go after Donald Trump.
What a waste. Trump's crime? He keeps winning presidential elections. And so I'll get to a story in a moment about all, he's not the only one they're targeting. He's, of course, the biggest target. But they're trying to put Republicans, attorneys in jail all across the country. The lawfare, the war in 24, it's real. It's real. Listen to this first from Fox News again, clip 7.
Exactly. And they can see that right up and down at every aspect of this case. The Democrats and the prosecutors and all the media cheerleaders, they look pretty foolish at this point, because as we've just heard, it is absolutely clear that this is entirely political. And the political effect that it's having, certainly within the Republican Party, we talked about the wider electorate earlier, within the Republican Party, it's so interesting. I was just at the California GOP convention this weekend. Absolute unity in the Republican Party. It has actually brought the party together fiercely in support of Trump. Again, an example of how this has backfired. Meanwhile, Joe Biden is running around the country, and within his party, his base is turning to him and calling him Genocide Joe and turning his back on them at these events. So it is just a political catastrophe, the exact opposite of what they intended.
And this is what we've been saying all along, that it's going to backfire. I mean, you go back to America Under Attack. We plug the book all the time. God's bringing back Donald Trump somehow, some way. Now I'll get to a Scarborough clip here in a second, where the Biden camp still sounds confident. So you wonder what they've got up their sleeve. The lawfare is not going to stop. It's probably going to worsen and intensify. Now, they're also very, very frustrated that the other cases didn't go forward, that they're being delayed, that the Trump team is running out the clock, as Bill Maher said. It's going to be quite a fascinating year. But it is satisfying to see this kind of poetic justice. I mean, the scandal, the evidence that's there to put Michael Cohen behind bars, he's admitted it. He's admitted it. And yet he still roams freely. Hunter Biden, free as a bird. Where are the prosecutors with the courage to go after the crooks on the radical left side? Listen to Scarborough as he gives his insights into the Biden team, clip 8.
I have, for 6 months, since people have been freaking out about Biden's team, I'm telling you, every time I go in and talk to anybody that's running the campaign, the big part of the campaign, I don't know what they're telling you and what they're telling other people. They're like, they act like people that are holding four aces. Well, what about this? Yeah, it's pretty bad. What about this? Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy, that looks really tough. Yeah, boy, Trump. They really.
Is this a criticism or?
No, I'm telling you, they know something that I think a lot of us don't know. And they look at numbers and they see where things are going. Hey, they're supremely confident.
Supremely confident. Wow. Even with these disastrous polling numbers. What kind of October surprises are we in for? Sam pulled these stats together. Democrats have aggressively targeted over 400 Republican lawyers and politicians with criminal charges. You know, all of the alternate elector schemes across the country. They're trying to put Republicans in jail for that, for exercising constitutional rights or states' rights. 400. You've heard about Peter Navarro. He may be followed by Steve Bannon. The other day, John Eastman, again, a constitutional attorney. He was arrested in Phoenix as part of the alternate electors plan. They're going after attorneys. They're going after Republican politicians. If you're not on the right side, they want to put you behind bars. As I said, the lawfare is real. In Georgia, 19 Republicans arrested and charged. In Arizona, 18 Republicans arrested and charged. 16 in Michigan. Nevada, 6 Republicans arrested and charged. And they're considering the same action. Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. This has been going on since Donald Trump committed the crime of beating Hillary Clinton in 2016. 8 years of war. 8 years of this lawfare, impeachments, indictments. It's been nonstop. You know, Trump outside the courthouse yesterday, he was saying, you know, I don't enjoy this, but I've got to do it. I've got to do it for 300 million Americans. At least he's one man with the courage to fight back. You know, it was interesting, this clip from Ivan Raiklin. He's a conservative commentator. He's pretty good friends with the General Flynn camp, travels with him from time to time. I think he has a podcast. But this video is making the rounds on conservative media. I think, in fact, General Flynn retweeted it. As he's talking to this reporter, Ivan Raiklin, that is, basically saying the only way that you can stop this onslaught is to fight back and to start putting them in prison, to start putting them in jail. And I just want to play some of this for you because, again, it's, I think, a really good indication of where we're headed in the United States, so deeply divided. I mean, even we've talked recently about, you know, Make America Hate Again. Gave you that article from last week. And here Bill Maher's on CNN last night talking about the hatred. He says he wish it could stop. It's just all over the place. Well, he's right about a few things, Bill Maher. I'll get to his in just a second. But first, listen to this conservative commentator. He's a former Green Beret. He's an attorney, really smart guy, and listen to him talking about fighting back with some lawfare of their own. Clip 11.
Mm-hmm. I have a deep state target list, and I'm coming for all of them. And what does that mean when I say coming for all of them? It means the most legal, moral, and ethical consequences to the maximum, to include the maximum punishment for treason.
Okay.
I'm going to incorporate the precedents that's already been set. So we're going to incorporate what was done to General Flynn. We're going to incorporate what was done to Steve Bannon, what was done to Peter Navarro, what was done to Mike Lindell, what was done to Scott Perry. Translation, expect to see live streamed swatting raids of every single individual on that deep state target list because the precedence has already been set.
Okay.
It does not matter what happens in the election. It does not matter who wins the election.
Ask.
This is going to take place at the hands of the American people, with or without an election, and with or without whoever wins the election. I guarantee you that that will take place at the county and state level, because right now the federal government is not in a position because of its capture and its corruption. When you take a look at the direct messages mm-hmm. and the geotagged location data of the 350 plus members on that deep state target list, and then you curate that, Elon Musk, and then do geotagging of the communications, and then you present those communications to name the county of the 3,143 county and county equivalents in our nation,
mm-hmm.
the 50 states and the 6 federal districts, right?
Okay.
And then you identify where a treasonous communication took place, and then you present that to the local DA, similar to good old Alvin Bragg. That then will create the nexus to showcase this criminal, conspirator, seditious conspiracy and treason charge. And that local DA, the local sheriff, will then be deputizing folks like Ivan Raiklin and those of us that were thrown out of the military. There's 80,000 of us that are ready, willing, and able in order to be deputized by appropriate sheriffs throughout the country to be participants as lawful deputies to conduct live stream swatting raids of every single person that we can identify that conducted the necessary unlawful activity by county on my deep state target list.
You were saying it doesn't matter what happens in the election. So you don't think you need sort of the protection of Trump's Justice Department to do some of what you're talking about?
No, because we're going after the Justice Department.
But like,
they are the enemy. That's what you fail to understand. The individuals that I mentioned are the enemy of our constitutional order. We're coming for them.
Well, he's right about the enemy. And to Donald Trump's credit, he's on the campaign trail talking about this criminal enterprise that he's going up against. Look at what they're doing, even as this man speaks. Who knows? I mean, he went on to talk about, hey, look at all of the red counties. You look at the country at large. It's mostly red. You look at the popular support for Donald Trump. He does have support at the local level. I mean, it's chilling to even think about what this man is suggesting. But how is the communist left ever going to back off? Like I gave to you, 19 Republicans arrested and charged in Georgia? Georgia? I thought that was a red state. Arizona, 18 Republicans. Arrest John Eastman. Arrest Steve Bannon. Peter Navarro's off in prison right now. Lawfare, ready for war. This is last January's Trumpet Magazine. If you don't have a subscription, by the way, call our operators there. 1-866-930-3024. The war in 24, we keep saying. We're seeing it. We're in the, I don't even know if you can say early stages, because like I say, the crime that Donald Trump committed was that he beat Hillary Clinton. And that was 8 years ago. That was his big crime. And they knew he was going to win again in 2020. I mean, think about this. Donald Trump is on his way to winning three straight presidential elections. There is a lot of truth to the fact that most of the counties in the United States are red. The DOJ is thoroughly corrupted. That's Barack Obama's DOJ. It's Barack Obama's FBI. That man's right in that they're the treasonous agents. We're headed for uncharted territory, for sure. I mean, the United States, I guess, we've had a brutal civil war in our history. But you think about those sobering prophecies in Ezekiel 4, Ezekiel 5. Well, the lawfare in many ways is backfiring. And, you know, you listen to Peter Navarro in an interview that he gave while in prison, and it appears to be strengthening his backbone. There's a few that talk like the man you just heard there. Not very many. Most people, they just cower in subjection to these radicals. They're afraid. They compromise. Or they try to win them over. They try to meet in the middle with the other side. And the other side's actively working to destroy them, to put them in prison. You see it all across the country, as I say. And then these same people, they go on and on about what might happen. Well, because they hear what you just heard there. This is the kind, as he explained there, this is legal and ethical retribution. It's the only way. You've got to put these criminals in prison. There's a long list of political opponents in prison or that they're trying to put in prison, while, as I just said, Michael Cohen, Hunter Biden, all of them, they roam freely, no problem. Biden himself, for the document scandal. Listen to Rachel Maddow as she, well, she's just lamenting the fact that they haven't had enough success in this lawfare aimed at Trump. Clip five.
The Stormy Daniels pay to cover up the affair hush money case. This is the only one that's going to go to trial before the election. Really? It wasn't supposed to be the first one. Remember what was going to be the first one? What was going to be the first one was a trial of Donald Trump for the big issue, right? For him trying to throw out the results of the 2020 election so he could stay in power even though he lost. Prosecutors asked the judge to start this trial 2 months ago. The first trial date they asked for was in early March 2024. That was going to be first. What happened to that?
Just realized that she probably attended the Obama School of Pregnant Pauses. Quite a few pauses in that statement there. But she's upset at Georgia Republicans that would dare investigate this woman. You know, the two lovebirds? They are so blinded by their rage, their hatred for Donald Trump, that they actually think Donald Trump is using the system to persecute his political opponents. It's just that these political operatives are being exposed. They don't have a good case in the case of the Manhattan trial, or they're being exposed as frauds, like down in Georgia. As I said, Bill Maher even, he's out promoting his book and so on. Most of what he says is, you know, not necessarily conservative by any means. But he does see the hatred boiling over. Listen to what he said. I think this was with Anderson Cooper, clip three.
So everybody's ginned up all the time. Right. And so there's this level of hate. I mean, that you were quoting from that last chapter, which is called Divorce. And there are lots of people who, like, talk about this. Divorce, you know, America should get a divorce, or maybe we should separate into different states. This, first of all, it's not possible. Mm. Second of all, it's not desirable. Our strength was always, I thought, that our diversity, that we are different. And I'm always preaching to people, not everyone's like you, get over yourself. People grow up in different parts of the country with very different values, and you can't own them or destroy them, and they're not going anywhere. They're not self-deporting. You can win every election. Half the country, the losers, are still going to be here, and they can't have them seething. We're always seething about each other. It's not that we're ever going to be agreeing on things. It's just that we can't hate each other. I am tired of the hate. Yeah. I don't want to hate half this country, and I don't hate half this country.
There's quite a few people on both sides that they see the sickness, but they don't understand the cause, do they? I mean, we got into that last week. Make America hate again. Who's generating that hatred, that rage? There's a spirit world behind it. He and Cooper went on to talk about just how polarized we are today as compared to previous eras. Clip four.
It is. I mean, the polarization is so real and very. How does that change? I mean, you look back, like in the 70s, America was very polarized. There was political bombings, you know, so I don't know if it's the same level or just a different form.
Well, I think the difference is, well, Fox News came along in the 90s. That changed everything. And then MSNBC obviously became a mirror of that in a way. I mean, I think they're much more realistic about what they talk about, and I usually agree with them more. But the same thing is that you're only giving one side of the story. What frustrates me the most about the media is that, like, whatever I hear, I don't fully trust. It's not that I don't believe what you're saying, but I don't think you're giving me the whole story. Mm.
If Bill Maher's not convinced what's coming out of CNN and MSNBC is the truth or the whole story, that says a lot about the regime. As I say, they don't get to the root causes of all of this sickness. In Jeremiah 17 and verse 9, it says the heart or the mind of man, it's deceitful and wicked. above all things. And then read Romans 8 and verse 7 about the built-in hostility toward God and his law. You see that everywhere that you look. This is why, again, we've got to be honest about what's coming, because you don't see human nature improving. It's getting so much worse. People see just how visceral the hatred and the rage and the division is. They see it. They feel it. They sense it. I think so many of them know that an explosion is coming. There was this article, I forget the name of the website, but it's basically talking about human nature, will worship, as we often talk about on this show. You can get our Colossians book and study through Colossians 2 and see about the demonic spirit behind this will worship. You just submit to our will. It doesn't matter if we don't give you the whole story or if we misrepresent the facts. I mean, seriously, how do you explain this headline? I gave it to you earlier. How Michael Cohen's past lies make him a more credible witness. That's at MSNBC. It's unbelievable. This article, it says here, often virtue in the body of the people is overlooked. George Washington wrote that corruption of morals, profligacy of manners, and listlessness for the preservation of the natural and unalienable rights of mankind would lead to tyranny. In other words, like we point out in the Character in Crisis booklet, I mean, you have to keep this American experiment, and that's what it is, to keep it alive and well, you've got to be a moral people. I mean, this goes beyond political differences here. You've got to be religious and upright. This is what the founders envisioned. There have to be checks and balances. You need it in government and you need it morally. We need to be held in check. By what? By what standard? Who decides? Who determines what standard? Well, if you throw God out the window, then it's a free-for-all. It says, George Washington believed that the happiness of society through a long succession of ages to come depended upon the ratification of the Constitution. In his view, ratification was afforded by the progress towards rectitude in thinking. Rectitude means rightness of principle or conduct. It means moral virtue. It says we see in Washington's use of that word the importance he placed on principles and virtues to sustain liberty. How do you sustain these freedoms, this liberty that Americans have enjoyed for centuries? He says here, George Washington was a servant of liberty. Go and study Romans 6, where Paul talks about, look, you're either a servant of righteousness or a servant to sin. It's one or the other. God says that our sickness, it's caused by our many sins. And so there are some explosions coming in more ways than one. It says here, endless historical examples warn us of the consequences of a society lacking checks and balances and limits on the power of government. What happens to a country with no constitution or deep-seated commitment to curbing the use of power? It says, absent those limits, virtue wanes, and it's easy for people to become servants of tyranny. The consequences deserve close examination, even those that derive from a mad ideology bent on the destruction of human life. He's talking there in the opening about some important American history. And then he talks about the Holocaust and one of Hitler's henchmen, Rudolf Hess. He was sentenced to death. They allowed for him, I think this happened in Poland, they allowed for him to write his memoir before his execution. And so for that reason, I mean, there was really nothing to gain. So he was pretty honest about how that they had, you know, the death camps right outside his personal home, where inside he had a loving family, he thought. Yeah, they were exterminating Jews just over the wall. And the children, his children, were inside his house laughing and playing, and his wife just adored him. This madman who was convinced that he was righteous because he was just carrying out orders. Well, this is from the higher ups. This is what Hitler wants. The end justifies the means, I guess. It shows how, I mean, that's the extreme, but it shows how far the human mind is able to go and still convince itself that it's righteous, that it's holy, that it's pure. Can you see why we need the scriptures, the word of God, as the ultimate standard, the absolute truth? You lose that, you don't have a foundation. You have nothing to stand on. And then it's every man doing what seems right in his own eyes, just like it says at the end of Judges. It says here, Haas described, this is that history with the Holocaust. Haas described his servant of tyranny mindset. I had received an order. I had to carry it out. I could not allow myself to form an opinion as to whether this mass extermination of the Jews was necessary or not. I just was following orders. So the same spirit, it's moving the dear leader. I mean, he's the one coordinating all these attacks, and you've got Fannie and you've got Bragg and all these people showing up in the White House, of course, to receive their marching orders. And then in the case of Bragg, no, there's nothing to stand on legally. But you get, and then you get the judge. Isn't that a beauty? You get the judge saying, hey, Stormy can come in, but we want to make sure we keep witnesses out that can come in and expose Michael Cohen. So it's all set up. It's all coordinated. It's all an attack. How far is the human mind able to go in justifying corruption, criminality, lawlessness? Haas often explained that fidelity to Hitler and the party trumped any sense of morality or principles. He just wrote in his memoir, yeah. Look, what it comes down to is loyalty to the party. Loyalty to Hitler. Haas repeatedly wrote about his obedience and certainty. Every order had to be considered sacred, and even the hardest and most difficult had to be carried out without hesitation. Well, that sounds pretty good. I mean, if it's an order from above, from on high, from a madman, it's sacred. After the war, Haas wrote, he was still a fervent National Socialist, but he admitted that the Nazi leadership, by using extremely effective propaganda and through its use of limitless terror, had made a whole nation submissive to such an extent that, with a few exceptions, the people followed in every way, wherever they were led, without criticism and without a will of their own. It was will worship. Just submit to the will of the party. It says here, Haas was not without a will. Earlier, he had remembered his choice to surrender his will to orders. How many others chose not to exercise their will? And then this author brings it back to America's history, and he says here, here's what haunts me. Today's America has fewer limits on the power of government, executive orders, party loyalty above principles, and the administrative state have run amok. How do you fix that? You can see why there's commentators like that Raiklin guy, that Green Beret, saying this is the only way we can fight back. Everything else is gone. The swamp is the swamp. How did this happen? How did we veer so far off course from what the founders of America envisioned? If you don't have the United States and Britain in prophecy, by the way, I mean, that will help you. America under attack, obviously, too. But to make sense of where we are in prophecy and why we are where we are, you've got to read that masterful text written by Herbert Armstrong almost a century ago. If you go back to the earliest versions of that book, see what he has to say about the great British Empire. See what God has to say about the single greatest superpower in the history of the world. As Mr. Armstrong wrote in there, I mean, the higher up we've gone, the harder the fall. That's what we're drawing close to. I mean, as a nation, this goes beyond Democrat, Republican, the United States and Britain in prophecy. The 800 number you can see there, 1-866-930-3024. Just this final statement from that article. In such a world, what will the servant of tyranny be capable of doing in the not-so-distant future? Will there be enough servants of liberty to turn back the tide of tyranny? Pretty sobering article in that website. America, what is that? American Institute for Economic Research. When we come back, we'll get through some emails finally and tidy things up. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
One third of your Bible is prophecy, and 90% of it is for our time today. This is why, when you study Bible prophecy, you often read statements like, in that day, in the last days, and at the time of the end. Biblical prophecy is what makes the Bible so relevant to today, so essential to understanding our modern world. Most people, even in the world of religion, assume that nations like Britain, America, Germany, Russia, and China are not mentioned in Bible prophecy. But if prophecy is mainly for our time today, how could the Bible ignore some of the most powerful and prominent nations of today? The key to understanding prophecy is knowing the biblical identities of modern nations. Learn about these identities in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. In this book, you will learn about the astonishing identity of the American and British people in biblical prophecies. Request your free copy today, The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
I think the only tough thing was for a lot of players, they felt like they didn't have a choice. It was almost like you have to do these things. You got to follow these protocols or else you're not going to have a job and you're going to get cut. But, you know, for me, I just felt in my situation, I talked to my wife and I was fully okay with stepping away from football. I was like, I'm going to stick to my principles.
Wow.
I'm not going to compromise. And if this is my last season, then so be it.
That's Harrison Butker, the kicker for the Chiefs. We played some from his commencement at that small Catholic college in Missouri, and he got a lot of fiery criticism in response to his address because of how much he praised the role of homemaker, among other things. But there he is talking about how that the NFL teams put on the pressure. Yeah, you've got to take the talk about will worship, right? You've got to get the jab. And there's one guy that said, you know what? I am not going to get the jab. And if I have to retire, I'll retire. I'm going to stick to my principles. That article that I read right before the break, I mean, that's unusual in this time that we're in. So much tyranny, so much will worship. You just go along. You have to go along. The pressure to go, to conform, it's so intense. On this show, we talk a lot on having the courage to stand strong for those principles revealed in Scripture, biblical morality. Some emails. The email address, by the way, if you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, it's td@thetrumpet.com. This one here says, thank you so very much for replaying this wonderful commencement address. This was on yesterday's show. If you want to go back and watch the end of yesterday's program, we played the commencement from Sunday's event at Armstrong Auditorium. I was so hoping that those who weren't able to watch the college graduation Sunday would somehow be able to hear it. I, at 75 years of age, received such godly motivation myself from these inspiring words for these seniors and sophomore graduates. Truly words from God to make us want to go and do as much as possible for this work. It says, whether financially or through the prayers we offer daily, by being a mentor to young and old through fellowship, correspondence, whatever way, we can each serve one another. It says, thank you. Being able to watch the graduation online was awesome. And now to hear this address again makes a great beginning for the week ahead. Another one here says, I wanted to thank you for the commencement. Absolutely outstanding. It's a message I don't think we hear enough. That should be a sermon for all of us. It says, I don't usually send emails like this, but that message was very inspiring. Appreciate the encouragement. It says here, another one, if you get one thumb down, consider you have two thumbs up from our home. Well, I guess they're talking about Rumble. We get the thumbs down. How many do we have today? Zero at the moment, but I need to refresh. We'll see now. 54 thumbs up, zero thumbs down. So this one here says, if you get one thumbs down, you got two coming from our home. We sure enjoy your programs in this crazy, not my world today. We need all the help that we can get. Your programs give us the bright side of the good life following Jesus. Thank you for the wonderful messages you send out every day. Truly a blessing to be able to tune in every day. Thank you again, over and over. This one here says, those young people who were in Herbert W. Armstrong College have really tasted the best of college with all they have learned there from your church. It says, your speech was wonderful and made me feel like I was sitting right there with those young people who are still so young to keep what you have said in their hearts and not forget all that they have been taught here in Edmond, Oklahoma. It says, the books and booklets of Mr. Armstrong and your father, along with reading the Bible, have opened my eyes to real truths I never learned in any church, locally or in any Sunday school class. It says here, may God bless everything you and your church does, because it has opened me to know God's truth, and without it, I would be lost. That's a good way to put it, because the Bible says the truth is what sets us free. The truth is what leads us to liberty. It says here, another one, your Trumpet Daily on Tuesday was phenomenal. You literally are putting your neck on the line, and you know that our lives are in God's hands. This is in response to, I think, last Tuesday's program, the one about Make America Hate Again, that powerful article from the Spectator. It says here, bravery that you are undertaking by speaking out against Obama and company, it's all coming down fast. It's a bit frightening. None of us want to go over to materialism or sexual lust or some temporary pleasure in this brief existence, which is quickly passing by, and Christ shortly returning to this earth. Another one here says, not to try to cheapen any of the recent programs, but glad to see the Bible study segment back today. Appreciate that. Sometimes we do vary the content from time to time. A lot of times the first segment, if we're talking about the world, and in the case of segment one today, human nature and the deceitful heart, I mean, there is some Bible study woven into those news items that we discuss as well. But I certainly hear that encouragement and understand how much so many of our viewers appreciate that final 15 or so minutes that we oftentimes devote to studying God's Word. This one here says, just notice that there are zero dislikes for yesterday's show. I'm not sure which one this is in reference to. Maybe those dislikers finally got their buttons straight. Only one can only hope. It says, anyhow, shout outs to the folks in the control room. That would be the guys over here. Shout out to the folks in the control room who help send your and sometimes others' beaming image through my nearly 24-inch diagonal LED screen each and every day of the week. What a work! Appreciate that encouragement as well. This one says, I'm grateful for the Trumpet Daily program and the sometimes painful truths that you're unafraid to give the audience. Please excuse me for this. I'm not a suspicious person, but this Trump-Biden debate is disturbing to me. Something underhanded is about to occur. Mr. Biden is willing to debate because he knows it'll never happen. So that's this individual's take. And I have seen a few other articles out there about this being a setup, about how that you know they're up to no good, like I was saying in the first segment. Another one writes, I love your show. I'm struggling how to present to friends and family that we're living in the end times and to keep politics out of it. That only causes deep division. Yes, indeed. Just like that clip we played from Bill Maher. I mean, so many people see the hatred. Both sides are just digging in their heels. Ready for war. War in 24. Another one here says, thank you for your message at the end of your program about our light affliction. It says you were talking about how to be grounded. You were really showing us how to be rooted and grounded like a large oak tree so that we can withstand the trials that are really light afflictions. It says here your last point about going to our Father and Jesus Christ to help for help and letting them to have their way in our life is the way to make our heavy burdens light afflictions. It says all your points were like the several roots of the tree of how we can take in the spiritual nourishment from God our Father and our Lord Jesus Christ, who is also God, whom we also worship. Another one here says, wow, just wow, what an interesting, informative interview with Dinesh D'Souza. Thank you for the inspirational, thought-provoking segment. We did get lots and lots of comments on Mr. D'Souza's visit. We've had some correspondence with him even since he was on campus with us for a couple of days. Another one here says, I can't believe how fast and jam-packed Sunday, May 5th, speaking of D'Souza's visit, can't believe how fast and jam-packed it was. It was a great honor and pleasure visiting Armstrong Auditorium. Celtic Throne rocked the stage. The acoustics quaked. Maybe you all are setting off the seismology devices, picking up the tremors in Oklahoma. It says here, the show was magnificent. We were encouraged to hoot and holler, and boy, did I lose my voice for the rest of the day. I was actually asked if I was a planned hype man in the crowd by friendly people next to me. I guess he was really enthusiastic in his cheering. It says, after the show, while making my way down from the beautiful and elegant balcony, I encountered Mr. Dinesh D'Souza and Sam Livingston coming up the steps. I was awestruck, but I kept my shrieks under control. So there you go. One last one here very succinctly says, thanks for all the wonderful reporting that you do. If you'd like to email the show, as I said earlier, the email address is td@thetrumpet.com. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.